The first round is on Owen's Recovery Science. Owen's Recovery Science is a single source
for PTs,
OTs,
ATCs,
DCs,
and other medical professionals
seeking certification
in personalized blood flow restriction rehabilitation training. Find out more and get certified
at owensrecoveryscience.com.
Can't thank you guys enough for taking a listen to the show, well, since we started it in 2015. Looking back on the year that was, 2017, we're going to give you the top 10 episodes of 2017. Take a listen. They're in no particular order. Can't thank you guys enough for, number one, listening, and then doing the thing we love even more, telling a friend, sharing an episode that you liked on social media, emailing the show to a colleague. Keep that up. That's the only way that the show can survive and be totally free to you. Without further ado, here's an episode from the top 10 of 2017.
Whether you want to escape the snow or play in it, Arias Medical has you covered. Try a rewarding travel assignment during the holiday season with Arias Medical Group. Call Arias at 1-800-340-2619 or visit ariasmedical.com. That's AREUS medical.com.
This is the PT Pintcast, a podcast that talks about physical therapy over beer, bringing together clinicians, researchers, and forward-thinking PTs in a show that's anything but boring.
Let there be beer!
This is the PT Pintcast with your host, Jimmy McKay.
Here we go. The next episode of the PT Pintcast starts right now. The best conversations happen at happy hour. Welcome to ours. Our guest tonight is a professor of spine biomechanics at the University of Waterloo, where he has a laboratory and clinic that explores low back mechanics, injury mechanisms, rehabilitation protocols, and performance enhancement. He's been the author of over 240 scientific journal papers and has mentored over 40 graduate students during his scientific journey. As a consultant, he has provided expertise on low back injury to various government agencies, many corporations and legal firms, and professional international athletes and teams. He has regularly referred special patient cases from the international medical community for opinion. On the PT Pintcast tonight, Dr. Stuart McGill. Stuart, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you very much, Jimmy.
Appreciate you taking the time out. As a recent graduate and as a person going through PT school, your name comes up a lot in the realm of LBP, low back pain. So it's cool to be able to actually put a voice to the name I've seen online so many times. So first I want to start, let's start from the bottom. We'll start from the very bottom, the back. We say there's no such thing as non-specific back pain, but you say there's three injury or pain mechanisms that you can show that shows where this comes from. What does that mean?
I absolutely stand by the statement, there is no such thing as non-specific back pain. There's no such thing as lumbosacral strain. Even degenerative disc disease, I think, does us all a great disservice. All this shows is that the person hasn't had a thorough assessment that will render a precise diagnosis of their pain, a full understanding of their pain mechanism. Pain isn't normal. It's there. There's something causing it. The great clinicians sort it all out. You know, I just get so dismayed at these current trends. Oh, the pain is in the patient's head and things like that. The most distraught, psychologically disturbed back patients are the ones that have been told, oh, the pain is in their head. I honestly thought this was a video podcast. So I had models prepared based on what we have documented as the various tissue sensitized pain trigger mechanisms, and I was going to show them to you. And there's many more than three, but I just had three prepared.
Okay. Well, I mean, the cool thing about the internet is what we can do is we can put those models up on our website. If you want to talk through those, and if people want to check it out along and have a little bit of visual, we can do that too.
There are videos of these things that are associated with my books and that kind of thing that are already there. But you know, if we just took a disc bulge, for example, and I hear students argue about, oh, there are papers that show disc bulges aren't related to pain because some people have them and they're asymptomatic and some people don't have them and they have back pain. But these are radiological confirmations usually, and the fly in the ointment in all of this is the radiologist never sees a patient, so they have no context for what they report as seeing in terms of the patient presentation, nor are they trained in the injury mechanisms. I mean, we've created, I think it would be fair to say this, I think we've created more disc herniations than any other laboratory ever. Basically, you need a certain amount of load on the spine. You have to bend it cyclically over and over again, and the collagen fibers, the ground substance that holds them together, gets soft with each repeated cycle of bend, and slowly, with pressure, the nucleus works its way through these delaminations in the collagen. Well, there's so much more to this. Can you imagine if you had a slender rod like a willow branch, you could bend that rod back and forth and it would never break. Very resilient to bend. And yet if you took a much thicker branch and bent it just a few times to the same level of bend, it would shatter. And the reason is the stress in that rod is a function of its thickness or diameter. So then we get into all of the variants in biology that cause some people to be very injury resilient, and yet others are really an injury waiting to happen. And it's no one's fault. That's just the way that their anatomy and mechanics conspire together to allow these cumulative stresses to eventually cause changes in their tissues and pain. Others have different shapes of their disc that really modulate the ability to resist damage. Anyway, the radiologists don't seem to know about all of this, and it's very clear when we go through a patient's MRI scans, for example, the fact that they have a disc bulge or not, you can see there might be an open fissure there or a disc tear that causes the disc bulge to change shape as a function of posture. So when the patient lays in the MR scanner, there's a certain appearance to the disc bulge. And yet if you were a physical therapist and you sat them on a chair, had them sit upright, pull up on the seat pan of the stool to add some load, the patient might say, you know, I don't have any pain, and yet they have a disc bulge there. But you could put them into different bending postures and quite rapidly, within 2 or 3 minutes, change the shape of that disc bulge, and then they say, you know, my right toe is on fire. Well, again, you know, it took a few minutes for the mechanical changes to take place. Now, all of a sudden, you have a very precise diagnosis and a direct link between the pain trigger, the tissue insult, and what the patient reports. You also have a very clear approach now as to what you need to do to avoid the cause and then to create a foundation for pain-free movement. So there just might be one very small example. It's quite a failure in our current practice.
Well, I'll say this, as a recent graduate and somebody who was just in physical therapy school not long ago, there are so many different ways to think. We're being pulled in so many different directions, and we've talked about this previously on this show, not necessarily about low back pain, but other pathologies or other schools of thought. Typically, it's the person who screams the loudest or who talks the most on social media that, unfortunately, students or clinicians wind up listening to more. It's just so difficult to sort through it all, especially as a student when you don't have much to base it on.
Well, here's a rule of thumb. The more time the expert spends on Facebook, the less time they're doing them.
That never, truer words have never been spoken. So I did want to give a nod to your new book. It is called Back Mechanic. You can check out more information about Dr. McGill's work on his website, which is backfitpro.com. That's backfitpro.com. New book out, shows the patients how to self-assess their pain triggers, and then what to do and what not to do. The first treatment, this jumped out at me, the first treatment is not exercise, but to eliminate the pain trigger. Let's give a little tease to it to give people a reason to want to read more. What are you talking about there?
Well, I get hundreds of emails every day from patients and clinicians alike, and I'm dismayed when a clinician will say, well, with that exercise, how many reps should we do? And I thought, oh my God, the answer to those questions are always, it depends on the assessment and what you've just learned about that patient. What are their current pain triggers? What do you need to do to avoid the cause? When a patient gets 10 minutes or even half an hour, it's very difficult to come up with a precise diagnosis in that time. I mean, to be frank, I spend 3 hours assessing a back, to go through the neurology, the biomechanics, the joints, and then I go through the psychology. How does the patient learn? What are their perceptions? To really, and their social situations. I can just think of a patient a couple of weeks ago who said, you know, I can't go outside and go for a walk. It's not safe for me to do that in my neighborhood. So if you don't know that, you can't prescribe interval walking as an intervention because the patient won't do it. So to really understand a patient, it takes me, as I said, 3 hours. But what the book does is it guides the patient through 9 self-assessment tests. It places them into different postures, through different motions, and under different loads. Almost all of the time, motions, postures, and loads modulate their pain, either for better or for worse. If it doesn't, that is a red flag. There is something else causing their pain, and we've found tumors and all sorts of nasty, sinister things by people who don't respond and cannot find more comfort or more pain in these provocative tests. The patients are then able to say, well, you know, extension with compression causes my pain. A little bit of shear load causes my pain. And then we guide them through a little bit of an algorithm that if extension causes their pain, it doesn't mean flexion is okay. It just means avoid that particular trigger, whichever it is. Now you get into pain science. Avoiding the trigger, avoiding picking the scab, allows the sensitivity to reduce. That's why it's so important not to add corrective and therapeutic exercises to
a
person
who's in pain.
So you've
made a career out of the back.
You have to build their capacity
to
respond well to that therapy.
That's the one area where you could pretty much
plant the
flag
the cause and allowing
them to
desensitize.
You always had a full schedule of physical therapists just because it's so prevalent. Just doing some research, I found a 2006 study in the Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery. They found the total cost of low back pain in just in the U.S., totaled between $39 and $78 billion in the year 2014. We're not that great at trying to visualize how big of a number that is. So I did some math, and there's no way to think about it. Let's see, $62 billion is around. If you spend $100 every second, it would take you 20 years to spend that money that the U.S. economy loses on indirect costs of low back pain every single year. So you've definitely found one area to focus on because it seems to be the most prevalent. Why do we have so many back injuries? If we're these animals that are supposed to be under load and flex and move, why does it happen?
That is a terrific question. You know, I was trying to write a piece just the other day. Someone asked me to put together a prevention program to address that very question. There's so many things. I would blame computers and the amount of time that so many people sit as being a prime cause. The perfect storm may be sitting at a computer for 8 or 9 hours and then going to the gym for 1 hour. Isn't it so unfair that people who then go to the gym for an hour hoping that this will help them actually end up becoming more intolerant to sitting than ever by going to the gym? I'm not criticizing going to the gym at all, but it is the routines that they are performing that adds to what's going on sitting in the computer rather than counterbalancing what's going on at the computer. So this whole idea of program design is not keeping pace with the changes that people are experiencing in mechanical load. So that would be one.
Yeah, that goes back to what you're talking about, their daily lives and making sure you know what they're doing for those 8 hours so you know what to prescribe next.
Yeah. And then my next line of logic would go to the answer, well, you know, it depends. Some people are just soft. They are not resilient enough to bear much mechanical or mental stress in their lives, and it manifests in pain. Others overdo it. They think that they have to strive for a personal best. They've met one, and instead of letting that settle, they're off now at the gym trying to set the next one. And we all know it's well documented that the one of the times of greatest risk is a step input in load. These are all reasons, explanations for the spread of back pain. And then I think the inadequacy of treatment. We all carry a lot of treatment tools in our toolbox. There aren't, let me use an analogy of a car mechanic, of which there's got to be thousands, tens of thousands throughout the United States. But how many of them know what tools to pull out of their toolbox to build a car that they know is going to win at Indy? Very few of those car mechanics. So we could do that with any profession, but let's choose those clinicians who deal with bad backs. How many of them have a good skill level with many different tools in their toolbox and can pull out the most appropriate tool for that individual person who's in front of them to stop their pain cause and build the foundation that that individual needs? It's not, you know, this approach is better than that approach. It's only what is the approach that's most suited for that individual?
How do we get there? I just graduated. How do I get there without, I guess, just, you know, failing so many people? I don't want to fail, you know, the first 300 cars that I try to get to Indy. I want to make sure. So how do I get there a little faster? I'm not looking for a secret or an easy way out, but what's a great way to get there a little faster?
Well, I wish I had a lot of wisdom on that, and I don't. I know my own career path. It's very untraditional. I don't know if I would recommend it to anyone else, only that it worked for me. And there was, I can tell you, Jimmy, there was no plan to my life whatsoever. I started my PhD in a spine biomechanics lab, and I would obviously dedicate myself to doing experiments to investigate how the spine worked and how it became injured. So I would have done that probably for a dozen years or so. And then I'd be invited to different medical meetings, so say a neurology meeting or an orthopedics meeting. And the docs would say, you know, that's a very interesting way to view that particular pain pathway. It's one that we've never thought of before. Would you come and see a patient with us? And my answer would be, well, no, I'm not trained as a clinician. And they said, well, don't worry about it. We'll do that. Just come and see a patient. And then I found very quickly that I wasn't tainted with traditional medical training, and I could see a patient and read all sorts of syndromes that were just so overt and easy to see that the docs were totally missing. And I would explain to them, and I'd say, well, look, let's coach the patient not to do that, but to do this. And the patient would say, oh, doc, you're magical. My pain is gone. I said, well, not really. All we did was stiffen your SI joint if, you know, that particular lunge was triggering your pain. Or let's lay on your tummy for a little bit. Let's see if we can position your head, take a little bit of tensile stress off your spinal cord, relieve that femoral nerve root. Oh, yeah, the anterior thigh pain just went away, or the tickle in my toe, or whatever it happened to be. And these guys were, they could look at it as if you're conjuring a magical show or something. But no, it was just an understanding of how the thing worked. And then, I guess the word got out, and there's been some some days where I've had a couple hundred requests in a single day to see patients from around the world. And some, as you can imagine, are very high profile athletes and politicians and whatnot. That's what I spend my time now, doing these consults.
I can't say whom for privacy reasons, but I had a patient come into a clinic, my very first clinic out of PT school, and he had been a patient at that particular clinic on and off for a couple of years and had good results, but he just had some back issues, and he walked in, he was talking to my boss and said, I just went up to see this guy up in Waterloo and you know, threw your name down, and I said, I've heard of that guy. He flew all the way up there to see it.
Yeah. Well, geez, I'm glad I helped him, because I don't help everybody, that's for sure. That's how this craziness came about. And I should say that in your training, I'm sure you heard the names like Vladimir Yonda, the great Czech neurologist, Shirley Sarman, the fantastic mm-hmm. physical therapist from St. Louis. Dick Earhart was another great clinical mentor of mine when I was younger, and he would see patients with me and teach the magic of what he had in his hands. Clayton Skaggs, he's still practicing now. He originally trained as a chiropractor, but then became, you know, medical director of some very powerful sports organizations. And so I've been able to work with these great people. It's my nature not only to try and learn from them, but I study what it is they do. Then I'm able to go back to the University of Waterloo and probe and play with some of the concepts that I've learned from them. And once in a while, I've been able to make them a little bit better and been able to give them back to them in a more modified form. But anyway, that's the whole fun of it. And can I suggest that you do that? You see, I really can't. But perhaps I could encourage anyone, don't follow a guru. Go out and try and get the audience and work with someone who has a bit of a reputation, someone who isn't on Facebook. Work with them and see a few patients with them. Then go to someone else and see what you can learn from them. Someone very different, someone who you may not even agree with. But if they're good and they get a few patients better, there's something that they're able to do for that particular patient. You know, some people work on psychological interventions, others on purely mechanical, others on, you know, might be a directional mechanical like a McKenzie. And yet none of these are highly effective with large numbers of people. They work for the right person in the right amount, and then you move on to something else as the person progresses. So anyway, it's a sorry for the long-winded answer, but...
No, I like that. I like that view a lot. I really do. Going to take a quick break with Dr. Stuart McGill. When we come back, I want to talk about another way we could reduce the pain, which is changing maybe the way we sit. Back in 60 seconds in the PT Pinecast. Don't move.
Get every episode we release delivered fresh right to you. Subscribe to the PT Pinecast on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher Radio, and never miss an ice cold episode. Effective clinical practice is grounded in effective research.
And that is what the Foundation for Physical Therapy does.
For over 35 years now, the Foundation for Physical Therapy has made it its mission to fund and publicize physical therapy research. Over the years, their researchers have helped introduce movement in babies with cerebral palsy,
integrate dancing to alleviate ailments in patients with Parkinson's,
and develop video games to implement physical rehabilitation. The work of their recipients would not be possible without the support of donors like you.
Your support can help us continue to elevate the physical therapy profession
and work towards creating a world
that thrives on mobility.
You have the power to make a difference.
Join the power of one
and contribute today at foundationforpt.org.
That's foundation4pt.org.
Donate today and experience the power of one for the Foundation for Physical Therapy.
Online at foundation4pt.org.
Considering a travel assignment over the holidays or ready to escape the cold weather for some winter sunshine? Arias Medical Group is the leading healthcare staffing agency, offering travel and full-time career opportunities for PTs nationwide. Call Arias at 1-800-340-2619 or visit ariusmedical.com. That's AURUSmedical.com.
Let's give a nice, warm welcome to...
We're back. It's so great to see you. Let's get back to the show now.
We're back on the PT Podcast with Dr. Stuart McGill, professor of spine biomechanics at the University of Waterloo. We want to get into three questions. Three questions powered by our sponsors at Arias Medical Staffing. First question, if you could do what you do anywhere in the U.S., where is some place you'd like to visit and spend some time?
I have been so lucky that I have been able to travel your country. So I'm trying to think of somewhere that I haven't been yet, and I might say Santa Fe would be one, only because of what I've heard about it. My mother's favorite town is New Orleans, and I've never been there yet, so there might be two.
Yeah, two good spots right there. Second question on three questions, what is something you're either currently reading or maybe just read that really inspired you? It could be physical therapy or non-physical therapy related.
I was listening to our national public radio a little while ago. I'm very concerned with what's going on in your country politically. You may have heard of Ralph Nader, who has run for your presidency, but in my view, he's got a very just good common sense understanding of how things works. And he has written a book to guide the rest of the world on how to handle this new USA. So there's one.
Third question on three questions. Who is someone in the physical therapy or maybe we'll go with you. Who's someone in the back pain or the back biomechanics world that we should be paying more attention to? Maybe someone who's doing some good work that's flying under the radar.
Yeah, I don't know if I would say back biomechanics because, you know, sometimes I get painted as this professor of spine biomechanics as if that is the only thing that we do. And we, you know, there are very strong links between, say, personality and the mechanical response of a person. So that would be led by a professor, Bill Maris, at Ohio State University. But there are some clinicians that, oh, I wish they could teach every physical therapist. I mentioned Clayton Skaggs, who's based out of St. Louis, who I think is a wonderful blend of having very gifted hands for soft tissue work and also a terrific understanding of corrective movement and exercise and programming and all the rest of it. I love what's going on in the pain science area as long as people truly understand what it is. And it's not a dismissal of all mechanical techniques and it's all now just become this intervention where you assure the patient that it's all right to continue moving. No, that's not what they're saying at all in my view. You know, I know... Lorimer Moseley and Pete O'Sullivan in Australia really well. I think people are taking some of their points way out of context. And so anyway, these are all interesting thoughts. You've got some terrific clinicians in your military, by the way. I think a lot of Deirdre Tehan, who's I think she should be your next president.
I like it. Let's start the campaign right now.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate that. That's a great answer. We'll have some people to look up. Last topic I really wanted to get into is something I found on your website. Reduce the pain, make sitting a dynamic task. The ideal sitting posture is one that continually changes. Is that why people have begun and it kind of faded in and faded out trying to sit on an exercise ball or a more dynamic surface if you're going to be sitting for a long time? And if so, why doesn't that completely solve the problem?
Well, sitting on an exercise ball is fantastic for a very short period of time. sitting in a traditional office chair is a great way to sit for a short period of time. So you're starting to get the idea now. Stress builds up when you don't move. So a frequent posture change migrates the stress from one tissue to another, and it really stops or thwarts the accumulation. But generally speaking, the problem with most people sitting is the loss of lordosis and the cumulative disc strain. So if you were to measure the strain in their discs, as some people do, that accumulates with the longer period that they sit. But if you were to put a support in the low back, and we happen to have a pneumatic one that you inflate and deflate, you tune it with the amount of air that's in it to support the low back, that will measurably reduce the stresses on the collagen fibers that will eventually loosen up with a little bit of training at the gym and a little bit of prolonged sitting, etc., as I was describing before. So anyway, don't sit too long. You know, you've heard this saying that sitting is the new smoking. It certainly is. And last but not least, it should be for a host of physical ailments, cardiac conditions, hormonal, and of course, the biomechanical influences on the spine and the hips. It is the new smoking.
I like that. I like that analogy. It's easy to see. The last thing we do on every episode is we do some shots. Instead of a beer, we do shots. Parting shots of wisdom.
This is the parting shot.
Powered by Optum. Optum offers weekend courses that are Monday morning applicable, utilizing approaches that make sense.
They promote excellence in hands-on treatment, exercise prescription, pain science, and clinical reasoning, offering a COMT,
as well as an APTA-accredited fellowship in orthopedic manual therapy, both online and in-person mentoring, with locations in Houston, Dallas, and Scottsdale, Arizona. Find out more online
at optumfellowship.com.
If there's one thought or one little nugget that you'd want everybody out there to kind of take with them out of this episode and onto their careers and next time they see a patient, what's a parting shot of wisdom you'd like to impart?
Treat every patient as if they were your mother. They deserve 100% of your full attention. They deserve your empathy, every little ounce of training that you've had and attention. I will wring the neck of a clinician when I see them in front of a patient. The patient is struggling and they're sitting down writing notes or just not paying attention. So pay bloody attention and be a good professional at your job.
I like that a lot. Dr. Stuart McGill, you can find out more information on how to connect with him and his teachings and his new book, backfitpro.com. The new book is called Back Mechanic. Dr. McGill, appreciate your time and you sharing your wisdom with the audience.
Thanks so much, Jimmy. And I get your professionalism behind the mic. Good for you, sir.
Well, thank you very much. Hope this isn't the last time we talk. And again, thanks for being on the show.
Oh, thank you.
The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. Our lawyers made us read that.